You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, hour number two. Here we kick it off with a bang, going to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline, and we are joined by NFL analyst Albert Breer. Albert, welcome for being. Thanks for being with us today. Welcome to the show.
You got it.
Do we have Albert Gibbs? Got it? I can't hear him.
We can't hear him.
You got me?
Yeah, we got you. There we are. Beautiful. Albert, thank you so much.
Sorry about that, guys. I don't know what happened there. My bad.
No worries. Let's start with Ohio State Pro Day. I know you were down there. What were the big takeaways for you?
Well, I think that for the most part, you know, the guys who are going to be high first rounders going without a ton to gain, you know. But I think of those guys, Joey Bosa probably helped himself the most. He got four extra reps on the bench, which is pretty impressive considering the combine's less than a month before it. He ran in the 4.7s, which is an improvement over the 4.8 that he ran in Indy. But I think the thing that really stuck out to people I talked to, at least, was his willingness to do everything.
Uh-huh.
It's rare when you see a guy who's going to be drafted that high, he's a potential top five pick, who does pretty much everything at Indy and then comes back and does pretty much everything at their pro day. In fact, at one point, they had to tell him that he couldn't take part in linebacker drills. And he wanted to jump in with Darren Lee and those guys after he'd gotten done with the D-line drills. So I think that Joey helped himself and that he showed, you know, what a competitive kid he is. And, you know, kind of the character stuff, I think, questions that he's going to be answering. I think that helps in that regard. As far as the guys who are going to be drafted later on, I mean, I think the guy who came in with the most to win or lose is probably Cardale Jones. He threw the ball. I mean, you can see the arm strength, of course, and it's always obvious with him. But, you know, there are other questions that he's going to have to answer about his ability to run a pro offense and everything else. And that sort of stuff happens behind closed doors. So, you know, those are the two main takeaways. And if there was one kid who maybe didn't help himself all that much of the ones that are going to be drafted pretty high, I think Von Bell looked kind of average, but, you know, overall, it's just a pretty impressive display of talent when you talk about six potential first round picks. And I mean, they could have 15 or 16 guys drafted, you know, so, I think it was really a show of the strength of the program and how far Urban's brought it in the last 3 years.
It definitely is, Albert. And again, thank you so much for joining us and changing gears here to the Cleveland Browns. Obviously you're in tune to everything NFL. Just how real and how in-depth are these talks for Colin Kaepernick? Because just over the weekend, you know, simply being off the radio, I'm asked consistently about it. What is the hiccup? Is it because of Denver? Is it because of Frisco? Is it Kaepernick's people, or is it the Cleveland Browns? What's the truth that you're hearing behind this story?
Well, I think one thing we all have to remember here, and it's easy to get swept away in this stuff because he's a big name, and he was in the Super Bowl 3 years ago. He was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league last year, you know, and I think sometimes people forget that part of it, that, you know, once you get separated from the season a little bit, you start to think about what he can be and not what he has been. And, you know, what he has been is not very good. And he wasn't great at the end of the Harbaugh era. And he certainly wasn't great for Tom Sewell last year and getting benched. So, I think part of this whole puzzle that you're putting together is the financial part of it, and I think that's the part that's important now because, you know, Cap can just sit there and say, okay, well, my money's going to be guaranteed on April 1st. And, you know, if we get to April 1st and have some sort of financial deal worked out with one of the teams you want to trade me to, you're going to have to make a decision to either guarantee my money or you're going to cut me. And if you wind up cutting me, then I'm going to find out what my real worth is anyway. You know, so I think the biggest piece of this that's left to work out, I think the draft pick compensation would be workable to either Denver or Cleveland. It's how you set up the contract for him wherever he's going next. I mean, that's challenging because it's just quarterbacks cost a lot right now. And, you know, he's got that deadline he's looking at. Because if you're Colin Kaepernick, I think that part of part of this whole puzzle, part of this whole thing that's enticing to you is, you know, if I get cut, I'll be able to go out in the open market and kind of figure out what these teams really think I'm worth, and maybe I get a couple teams bidding against each other. Out on a market where Brock Osweiler just got $18 million a year and Kirk Cousins was tagged at $20 million. Or I come back and I get over $14 million guaranteed because the Niners keep me on the roster past April 1st. So he doesn't really have to do anything, and I think that's part of the holdup here.
Talking with Albert Breer from NFL Network, the national reporter there. We talked about those trades. Now, a new one is kind of just coming out of the woodwork because people think it seems logical at this point, and that is obviously moving on from, of course, Joe Thomas, the Hall of Famer, Pro Bowl left tackle at a team that seems to be building. I won't say rebuilding because we're building and haven't built anything yet. Maybe moving on from Joe Thomas. Do you think that's something that could happen, would happen, should happen?
What I can tell you right now is that they have been they have fielded calls on Joe Thomas, and my sense at this point is the asking price is a little too much. Now that can change. There's a lot of time between now and the draft, and you'd assume they'd want to get something done before the draft if they are going to trade him, because they'd want whoever they're going to get in return to be on the roster this year. I certainly think that you look at the idea of trading him and you see how much you can get. But there is another side to this, too. I know it sounds good, you look at a player like Joe Thomas and you say to yourself, okay, well, when are we going to be able to be in a position where we're going to be competing for a championship? And if you're realistically saying to yourself, okay, that's 2, 3, 4 years down the line, then you start asking yourself the question, what's going to be left of Joe Thomas then? Is it really worth keeping him around? To me, the wild card in all of that is if you're going to draft a quarterback with the second overall pick, whether it's Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, or someone else, and you're planning on playing that kid right away, the value of having a left tackle like Joe Thomas, I don't think you can put a number on it. Because we've all seen what happens when you put a young quarterback behind a bad offensive line, how that can affect a guy's career. And how that can change the dynamic for him. I think David Carr is the best example of it. We've seen it happen a lot of times where the environment around a quarterback isn't very good and it winds up stunting his growth. And so I think that's got to be part of the whole equation, too, for the Browns. If you don't think the guy's going to have much left by the time you're able to be competitive, you do have to consider the idea of trading him. But I think you also have to consider, what kind of environment you're going to be creating for whoever your young quarterback is going to be. And so if you are going to move on from Joe Thomas, I think that you certainly have to have some sort of viable plan B in place, because not having an answer at that position could really affect the development of whoever is at the most important position.
And Albert, I know that since the Colin Kaepernick talks have really started and included the Cleveland Browns, some of the talk, even locally by some of the analysts, has changed, and the percentage that we would in fact possibly still take either Carson Wentz or Jared Goff at number 2, at this point right now in your mind, has that percentage changed to you? And if not one of those two quarterbacks, who would be in play at number 2 for the Cleveland Browns?
Well, I think that those two are the main guys that are out in front for everybody. But I don't think that those guys are way, way out in front of Paxton Lynch or Connor Cook, And so I think that those four are the guys with the shots go in the first round. And to me, this is more wide open than it's been in a long, long time. Last year, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota were 1 and 2, and there was no close third, And so I don't think any of these prospects are on the level of a Winston or a Mariota, at least at this point. But I also think that there's more depth in this year's group, and the 3 and the 4 and the 5 this year are a little bit stronger than they were last year. So that gives you the chance to be creative. You might think about the idea of, all right, is there a player we really love at 2 at another position, and then, we go at 32, with a quarterback there. To me, I think the main thing, Matt, is just you don't want to pigeonhole yourself into making a decision at that position in any single year. Because I think what we can all look back and see, and you can take a 10, a 15-year sample, there's not a franchise quarterback in every class.
Right.
So you don't want to pigeonhole yourself into we have to take a quarterback in this particular year. If you don't think there's a franchise guy there, well, then, okay, maybe you do – roll the dice on a Colin Kaepernick. You bring back Josh McCown, and you tread water at that position for a year because the answer isn't there, you know? And so that's what Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown and all those guys have to determine now is whether or not there's a guy worth taking with the second overall pick there, because there's nothing worse than making the wrong decision high in the draft at quarterback. Just people fired. We saw it happen with Jake Locker. We saw it happen with Brandon Weeden. We saw it happen with Johnny Manziel there in Cleveland. We saw it happen with Blaine Gabbert. We saw it happen with Christian Ponder. It's disastrous when you take the wrong guy in the first round of that position. So if there isn't a franchise guy there, don't take one at number two. Find a way to tread water at that position for another year and then go and take another stab at it in 2017. So I think that's where the Browns need to – that's the decision for the Browns now. It's not figuring out which one's your franchise quarterback. It's figuring out if there's a franchise quarterback there. And if there is one, then you pull the trigger on them. If there isn't one, there's nothing worse you can do than reach on one, because that's what's going to wind up costing your job.
Talking with Albert Breer, and quite frankly, for the Browns, they'll take anybody at any position in the first round that actually pans out, that which would be a departure from the last few seasons. Albert, free agency for the Browns, a lot of departures, no real notable signings. Some stuff about the front office was kind of grumbled out there from agents, et cetera. What were you hearing about that, and what are your expectations for the Browns and the rest of free agency?
Yeah, well, they're definitely doing different. They're doing business a little bit differently. And so, you know, I think that that's certainly – other teams have noticed that. You know, I'll put it that way. Other teams have looked at the way the Browns are doing business, and it's raised questions with them. That doesn't mean they're doing things the wrong way. But I can certainly tell you those questions are out there, and that they've been slow-moving to do deals. Now, to be fair to the new group, those same questions were there when Ray Farmer was in charge and Alex Shiner was in charge, and Mike Patton was in charge. So it's sort of, I think what other teams are seeing are the same sorts of problems with a different group of people now. You know, again, this is the first go-around for this group with Sashi and Paul and Hugh. And so, you know, we don't really have a body of work yet. I think the one thing that certainly I think was a red flag that a lot of people brought up to me was the Mitchell Schwartz situation. And it's not that offers never get pulled. That happens. You know, sometimes you might have two guys you're looking at, and you just sign one guy, and obviously the offer to the other guy is the opposite.
Sure.
But I think the manner in which this was handled certainly raises serious questions, and I think that there's some question of whether or not that'll have fallout in the locker room with other guys, and whether or not there'll be some sort of long-ranging impact that could have. And so that stuff remains to be seen. I think the one, you know, point of caution I think that everybody needs to take with all of this is that, they have decided to do business a different way, and we don't have any sort of body of work on whether or not the way that they're doing it is going to work or not. So I think there needs to be some patience as far as assessing, whether or not the way that they're doing it is the right way to do it.
And Albert, last one from me, and I know it actually, yep. You're part of the breaking news, a buddy of mine, Eric Weddle, signing with the Baltimore Ravens. I think it's something that it seems as if you're in favor of, and how is that relevant to the division here in the AFC North?
Well, I'll tell you what, Matt, I mean, the first thing that struck me was, with Steve Smith 2 years ago, when he signed in Baltimore, what a great fit that seemed like. This feels like the same thing. I mean, it really feels like, he's one of those guys that'll really fit in really easily in Baltimore. And they've been able to assimilate veterans from other teams into that place over the last few years. And, another good example would be a guy like Elvis Dumervil, they've been able to bring guys in from the outside consistently over the last 15 years. This goes back beyond John Harbaugh and guys who are going into their last shot. I think another example, too, that would be a good kind of parallel would be Rodney Harrison going to New England from San Diego.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, he's been a great player for the Chargers over the course of the last 9 years, and this really feels like the right place for him to go and chase a ring now. And so, I think this is a great spot for Eric, And I think having a creative defensive coordinator like Dean Pease there in Baltimore, and a defense that's going to allow him to do a lot of different things, which I think is his strength, certainly you know, he could be another piece to the Ravens bouncing back, which from what was, you know, a really a star-crossed season for them when you look at the way the injuries hit them and everything else.
Albert, appreciate the time and
thanks,
the insights.
Bro.
Yes, thank you very much. Covering everything Browns, Buckeyes, even a little Ravens there at the end with our buddy Matt's buddy Eric Weddle there. Appreciate it, Albert.
Yes.
All right, you can follow him on Twitter at Albert Breer from the NFL Network. He was our guest on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines again, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850 here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nate's girl, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. So, interesting. Gibbs, what do you think the key things there from Albert Breer? It sounds like the Colin Kaepernick thing.
Hopefully it's dying.
Much ado about nothing.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping.
And that's why I asked the question, because there's so many sides to it. There's Kaepernick himself, his agent, the 49ers, the Browns, and the Broncos. And the picks that they feel like everyone wants to give up and the money that he feels like he deserves.
Sure.
And yet, all in all, San Francisco can kibosh the whole thing and say, we're not trading you.
Correct.
You know, so it is much ado about nothing.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
216-578-0159. I do want to respond to one thing, by the way. He did say that, you know, if you miss on a quarterback early in the first round, that's the worst thing possible. Missing on anybody in the first round is not good.
We've done it 3 years in a row.
I was just going to say that.
And I think it's worse to whiff on somebody and not take a quarterback, miss out on a quarterback, like St. Louis and Houston did in that draft, than it is to take a quarterback and not have it work out.
Miss on a non-quarterback?
When you could have had a franchise quarterback.
Oh, yes.
If the Browns had to draft quarterbacks in the first round for the next 10 years to get the one, and then they got one and became a successful franchise, we'd all think it'd be worth
it. But here's the perspective that people have to take when they constantly call in. And again, I want to see Joey Bosa get as drafted as high as he can, make as much money, and be the best pro he possibly could because of the university that he represents.
Sure.
And where he came from, right? But was Jadeveon Clowney and who he was at South Carolina, even taking the plays off when the play was away from him, the can't-miss freak athlete that's going to wreck this league and have double-digit sacks each and every year, right?
Yes.
Okay, the guy can't get on the field, and even when healthy, inside information, okay, and I've mentioned his name one time on the show already, was on the Buckeye Cruise, literally told me that he chose not to play in the playoff game or wasn't healthy enough in his eyes alone to play in the Houston Texans playoff game. And so therefore this individual started in his place. This is choosing doing nothing over the dream, to live out a dream of not only playing in the National Football League, making the kind of money that you do, being drafted number one overall, and your franchise finally having an opportunity to play in the postseason, and you choose not to play.
Yeah. Didn't he, like, not show up even? He came to the building?
That I don't know. I'm just – it was like a hangnail or something was bothering him.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Again, got to find that guy. That's what the Browns need to do. Do I want them to whiff? No. They got to find that guy. And if they could get that guy, we will all be happier. Chris, welcome to the show.
How y'all doing today?
Good, man.
Good. How are you?
All right, I'm going to talk about the Browns quarterback situation in the draft, but first I wanted to say about Cardale Jones. I called y'all a couple months ago, and y'all laughed at me, but I told y'all after the workouts, at the time I said the combine, but in this case it's the pro day because he pulled his hamstring.
Yes.
But I told y'all after Cardale Jones' workout, he's going to probably come up in the top three in the quarterbacks in the draft. And now you're hearing a lot of reports, and I've seen mock drafts with Cardale Jones going as high as the second round. So I told y'all laughed at me, but I told y'all Cardale Jones was going to come up after he worked out.
You said, do we have a bet? Didn't you bet us $1 million?
I said, I did say at the time, I bet $1 million he'd come up in the top.
And you're lucky
three.
Dak Prescott got his DUI.
Hold on. I wrote this down. I have a note about this. I'm going to find it in just 1 second.
I did say that. I said I bet $1 million he'd come up in the top three.
You did.
But I've seen reports of him going in the second round, and I'm seeing him going higher than they got from Memphis. I'm seeing mock drafts that got him up there.
All right, here it is. January the 19th at 2:26 p.m. in the year 2016, Chris in Cleveland said Cardale Jones will be one of the first three quarterbacks drafted in 2016 for $1 million. I said we'll bet a bottle of bourbon on it. But Chris, you're still on. I like it.
But I'm telling you that you see he coming up, and they talking about Pittsburgh taking him in the second round. They talking about Arizona taking him in the second round. So I told you
he would be an interesting fit in Arizona. I think in Pittsburgh he's a much better fit. I don't think he's what Bruce Arians says he wants in a quarterback.
But Arians was Roethlisberger's guy for a while.
Yes, but when you hear him talk about what he wants, granted this is the same guy who drafted Logan Thomas,
correct?
And that didn't work out either,
right?
So.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting.
On to the Browns. Me right now, I'm at the point where I'm not a Bosa guy. I mean, I like Joey Bosa, but I don't really think he'll fit the Browns. But I'm a Jalen Ramsey guy right now, and you know, I love a quarterback. I like Dak Prescott as a second or third round guy, probably more like third round. But at this point, there's no quarterback in the draft that's far ahead of the rest of the guys than Jalen Ramsey is at his position. Like, Jalen Ramsey, to me, is a can't-miss prospect. I see him being an Ed Reed type of safety. And I don't think you can pass up on a guy like Jalen Ramsey for a quarterback that's not that far ahead of the other guys in the draft. Like, when I look at – I agree with you that Goff is the best quarterback in the draft. But I don't see Jared Goff being heads above heels better than all of the other quarterbacks. And I don't think the potential for Jared Goff is the way it is on Jalen Ramsey. So – let's say Jared Goff turned out to be a top 20 quarterback. And if Jalen Ramsey turned out to be a Hall of Famer, I can't live with that. I mean, I got to get that guy that's going to be a Hall of Famer.
So here's what I would look at. So, and again, and if they took Jalen Ramsey and because they didn't feel like a quarterback was a franchise quarterback, that's their determination. I couldn't argue with that from their standpoint. But having a Pro Bowler at a position that, or a Hall of Famer that doesn't necessarily impact the game as much as a quarterback, has proven not to be worth a heck of a lot. Joe Thomas is surefire Hall of Famer,
and a guy like Ed Reed is a once a generation guy. Him and Polamalu, right? The two of them in the same decade, are two
different kind of players, but total game changers as safeties.
Correct. And where was Ed Reed drafted, and where was Troy Polamalu drafted? Not second overall.
No.
Polamalu, I think, was 15, 14, 15, 16, 17, maybe? I want to say the San Diego Chargers traded out of the 19th spot, I believe, in 2003, my draft year, to move back, and we took Sammy Davis.
Troy Polamalu was pick 16.
Pick 16.
In 2003.
And Ed Reed would have been 2002 draft.
And Ed Reed was pick 24.
24. Okay.
It's just because of the valuation of those positions. Like, I don't see somebody trading up to take a safety that early.
No. But if their scouting staff, their general manager, their top talent evaluator feel as if that it's a must-have, can't-miss guy when you really feel like you're lost on anything else, you go with that top guy on your board.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. But again, as we've shown, there is no such thing as a can't-miss player in the National Football League.
And I made that point with Jadeveon Clowney.
In that same draft, the first defensive player taken was Jadeveon Clowney. The first offensive player taken was Greg Robinson. I think both teams would be absolutely asking for a do-over.
Who
right
went
now.
3, 4, 5?
Bortles.
Bortles went 3, you're right.
We traded out of 4, Watkins. 5 was Khalil Mack. So it got a little bit better. But I think when you look back at 2014, the most egregious thing for the Browns was they took a quarterback, but they had a 75% chance of getting a guy that they would at least feel like is a franchise quarterback, or a guy that they would at least feel like is a competent starting quarterback in the NFL, something they haven't had for a long time, in Carr, Bortles, and Bridgewater.
Yes.
And they picked the one guy who is now not in the league. Cleared waivers, by the way. Nobody claimed him. No surprise there. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get more of your phone calls, 216-578-0850 on CBT.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl and Brie along with Mr. Jason Gibbs. We'll go back to the phones. We got our guy Mike in Youngstown with us. Mike.
How you guys doing?
Good, man. Good, how are you?
Good, good. Hey, Clowney, I think one of his claims to fame and to put him on the map was that hit against the running back from Michigan.
Yep.
I mean, if you go back and look, I don't.
He was on the map before that. That was just more like confirmation. This guy is dominant.
No, I understand that. But if you go back and look at his stats and compare to Joey Bosa, I just wonder how they are. And the other thing is, do you think that the Browns are a little bit, I'm not say hesitant. That's a big word for me, but it's not the word I want to use. That they're maybe not sure that Wentz or Goff is the person that they want by entertaining trade thoughts with Kaepernick with San Francisco?
I think they're unrelated. I think they just want to get as many possible quarterback options as they can. That's what I would think it would be about, getting as many assets at that position as possible. Let's go north of the border. Cam from Canada.
How's she going?
Good, man. How you doing, Cam?
Good. Matt, you played with Sammy Davis Jr.?
Sammy Davis Jr., yes.
Matt, was there ever a point in time where he looked at you and said, you know, man, some cats take cats and some cats take chicks?
Yes. Yes, it's all he used to say.
Did he ever play Bojangles?
He did not. We tried, okay. And he never played it.
All right. Well, great day to be alive. Isn't it nice to believe, though, that the guys in charge have some peg in the ground for how they're doing things? Isn't that a nice feeling?
It is a very nice feeling.
Whether it's the right one or not, they have a peg in the ground.
Yes. They certainly have
like,
the way they want to operate. Yes.
For sure. I like, for me, when people are talking about Joey Bosa,
yes.
God love him. I mean, this guy is my kind of guy. I mean, he is just a beautiful football player, and he does not have enough pop for me to play that really intense position we need him to play, which is on the end. I don't think he's big and strong enough to play in the middle. I love the kid. I don't think he's right for us. I don't. I think Buckner's our guy if we're going to go defensive player. I truly do.
I think he's more of a 4-3 DN, Joey Bosa. And that's where I think he'll be very successful.
Yeah, I agree. Cam, thank you very much for the call, as always. If Bosa were to come here and play so that people can understand, he's not big enough to play the three technique, which is the outside out of the guard, which is usually played by a player somewhere between 285 pounds and 295 pounds, but like big and thick and take on the double team, but also can be productive. Where I could see him playing if he can get up to about 280. Is the five technique, which is basically on the weak side of the defense, okay, where a lot of the most productive players you're playing on the inside eye of a tackle. So that tackle is going to be stressed by an outside linebacker, a Von Miller, a Paul Kruger, a Nate Orchard, and be stressed to kick. So you're getting a fanning guard. You're getting Joey Bosa at 285 with all his hand skills, you know, with all his ability, his explosion. And that's why J.J. Watt moves across the line, because he wants to get a little bit of everything so that nobody can get a beat on him. But that's in a 3-4 defense where I'd put Joey Bosa, but he needs to play at 280 pounds at minimum. Otherwise, he becomes a one or two down defensive player in our scheme.
Do you think that he can get up to that weight?
I do. I don't think he's going to be a specialty player as a rookie, even drafted 5th overall, 4th overall, 2nd overall, wherever he's trained. He's going to be a Nate Orchardish type of player, because until he grasps.
Even if he goes to a 4-3?
Yeah, I do. I just don't think he can take the – at 269, you know, or 274, whatever he gets up to, he needs to put on more weight.
So you don't think that – do you think he's worth a top 3 pick then if he's going to be a situational player as a rookie?
Yes and no. I'm honestly split down the middle, because I think the the impact that, that he can have in situations. If he gets you six to eight and a half sacks in situational, he pays off for you. But he projects to be a 10, 11, 12, 13 sack guy in years two through five. Then he's very much worth a top five pick.
Absolutely he is. All right, let's go back to the phones, 216-578-0850. Eddie is on his cell. Eddie, welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good, man.
All right. Yeah, he, my thinking is this, man. They better jump all over that and make whatever move they have to secure Kaepernick, you know? I'm just, they messed this draft up for I don't know how many years in a row now, you know? It's just at least we'll get a proven player at quarterback.
Is he good, though? Is he proven to be good? I think that's the real question.
I think he's proven that. You know, he's coming off the injuries to the shoulder and the thumb thing. But, I'm not a big 49ers fan by any means. I'm just going off what I read in the play dealer over the weekend. But, the injury to the shoulder wasn't his playing arm, his throwing arm. So, they messed this draft up so much. The last several years.
These guys, and I know, and that is totally fair to be frustrated with the way that the Browns have drafted. Let me say that again. Totally, completely, absolutely fair. However, that is not the doing of Sashi Brown. That is not the doing of Paul DePodesta. It's not the doing of Hugh Jackson. So these guys are different. While they are still the Browns, and I know that everybody wants to kind of assign, you know, the Browns can't draft
them
to
all
those
in.
Guys. Yes, but could they fail on their own? Of course, anybody could, but could they have success? That is the case, too. So we'll just have to see when they take it. Just to say that the Browns haven't drafted well before, at some point, I mean, it's hard to be as bad as the Browns have been drafting.
It is. I swear, the hardest thing for me walking around doing what I do, you know, covering the Cleveland Browns when I'm obviously not in here in Berea, is to have a Browns fan come up to me and ask me the reason why. Why are they so bad? Why do they do this? Why? It's been 15 years, and I have no idea how regime after regime, coach after coach, can screw it up as bad as they have.
It's been impressive in a bad way. Hopefully it will become impressive in a good way going forward. 216-578-0850. Last opportunity to get your phone calls in here. On Twitter, I would say this, guys. Most people are pretty much done with the Colin Kaepernick thing. Most people are pretty much over it and are ready to move on from it. And
I've been asked twice already.
People just, they don't see the fit, which I think makes the most sense. That's what I like.
Right, because they're getting in tune to the way in which we're going to do business moving forward.
Yeah.
And we haven't even done anything yet.
Right, but you're starting to get a sense of it. All right, here's a good one. I think Wilhelm's going to like this one. Benji is on his cell phone. Benji.
No feathers. Great show. Great show as
Thank
always.
You. Thank you, man.
Hey, man, what about just trading down, getting Ezekiel Elliott, then with the 32nd pick or, you know, getting Cardale?
I don't know that Ezekiel Elliott, by the way, is going to make it past the Dallas Cowboys at number four.
You don't think so?
He might not. It's possible.
Most people also see him going to Philly at, what, nine?
True that. I'm thinking Bosa at Dallas. That's what I'm thinking.
Bosa for Dallas?
Uh-huh.
Some good options. At number four.
What if Tennessee, question for you guys, and I'll hang up and listen. What if Tennessee goes with Bosa, and then we're here at the second pick with Sansa and everyone else? What do you do?
I still, if we believe there's a franchise quarterback out there, we take him. If not, then you obviously could take a guy like Tunsil. Makes trading Joe Thomas seem certainly a lot easier and a lot more reasonable. Or you take the best
and
guy
on your
board.
And you get another swing at the plate later in the first round?
Yeah. So exactly. if you didn't think there was a quarterback that was a franchise quarterback, you take the best player on your board. Now, if you do think there's a franchise quarterback, I don't think you let that person get away because that's what's plagued this franchise since 1999.
What if the analytics say that to get rid of Joe Thomas and to if Tunsil is there and that's the best player on the board to go ahead and get them? Do you do that?
Only if you don't think there's a franchise quarterback. I mean, we've had the best left tackle, obviously, you know, in football, and it hasn't led to wins. So to me, we need to find guys who lead to wins.
Definitely. If Kaepernick's not there, then where do you go from there? If
you don't like one of the quarterbacks this year, obviously you're just kind of going with Josh McCown one more year. I'd like to think if they didn't think one of these quarterbacks this year was draftable. in terms of like really being an opportunity for franchise, then I'm Nathan Zagura bringing in RG3. Give me somebody else that's young, that's here, that has an opportunity. I don't want to take a year off from swinging at the plate.
I agree.
That's what I would say. 216-578-0850.
I want no dreads, RG3.
Okay. Why? You just don't like them?
No.
Why not?
They're horrible.
Dreads?
His dreads.
His dreads in particular.
Yes.
Yeah, I think some dreads can be strong looking. Al in Ontario. Al.
Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it, guys. I've been listening to you guys for a long time. I do miss
Thank
Vic.
You.
No offense, Matt, but I think you guys do a great job.
Thank you.
I'm going to follow up with what the previous caller just said. Like, that was my question. Because we've drafted so poorly, why, and we're unsure about these two, if you're not 100% sure about these two quarterbacks, why wouldn't we go with Ramsey or
if Sashi and Paul and Hugh are not sold on these quarterbacks, then that's what you do. If they are, and it's very possible that the analytics study, I would imagine, will be pretty favorable on Goff. If they are, then go ahead and do it.
I'm just, my fear is 2 years from now, we're going to be going, yeah, we could have had Jalen Ramsey, and Wentz isn't even in the league anymore.
Well,
like, it's happened so many times.
I think it'll be, I don't think that will be the case, but it has happened so many times, but who have we picked with our first pick? When is the last time we took a quarterback?
Tim Couch? Was it Couch?
Nah, the Couch was the only one that's been in the top 20 that we've taken as a quarterback since 1999. But, I mean, I think the last one, I guess Whedon technically was our first pick that year, pick 22. No, he wasn't. Trent Richardson was our first pick. The last time we took a quarterback, the first pick, a long time ago. So we don't have those impact guys, and we have been not taking quarterbacks. So I think you just got to find it. Let's do it. 216-578-0850. We'll back. Final thoughts wrapping up on this Monday edition of CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Wrapping it up here on this Monday edition of CBD, the one story from around the league that caught my eye today is that during his introductory conference call with the New Orleans Saints on Friday, tight end Kobe Fleener noted that some players, quote, went along for the ride last season after things turned south following Andrew Luck's injury. That rubbed linebacker who signed with Chicago Bears, Jarrell Freeman, who was on the Colts last year, very much the wrong way, said Jarrell Freeman. Fleener, he didn't have the guts. That bleep pisses me off. And he must have been looking in the mirror when he did that interview. I despise guys like that. That's what little girls do. Talk about you when you're not around. I'm a grown man. If I see something I don't like, I'm going to go have a face-to-face conversation with that player, and we're going to get an understanding. I feel like I had a hand in building what's over there, so he's bleeping on me too. That's a bleep move.
I like that.
What do you think about that? What do you think about what Kobe Fleener said, and what do you think about the response?
I like the response, because I think if you're a grown man playing a man's sport, it's very easy for you to walk across a locker room and have a man-to-man conversation. It doesn't have to be a confrontation. It's just going to say, hey, you know, this is where I was coming from, or you can make a generalized statement at a lunch table and have the ability to clarify what you said to that individual from a face-to-face standpoint if they didn't take a liking to it. So I like the response. And I think it's very easy when you leave a situation that did not go as planned with Fleener, you know, not having his guy, Andrew Luck, healthy the last two seasons, and their Super Bowl aspirations get pulled out from under them on multiple occasions. One, they got close to the AFC Championship game, got blown out. Another one, it was essentially a season that was lost. And yet you walk away and go get $30-plus million from another team. It's easy to say that in hindsight.
Yeah.
So it is a full-on cop-out, and I think that, you know, Freeman has every right to say that. And if I were them, I'll be in tune, do the Colts play the Bears at any point very soon? Because that'll be very interesting.
Now, if he's on Kobe went to Freeman
with
the Bears.
New Orleans, you're right.
New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans, Chicago. Uh-huh. Sorry. You're right.
Yeah. It will be interesting. We'll see what happens.
Oh, well.
It's just interesting. I just think in the NFL, everybody knows it is what it is. Like, you just shouldn't. just saying there's you nothing to gain by taking shots on your way out the door.
No, there's not. You
nothing
just got
is
paid.
Gained. Right.
You just got paid. For what?
Just be happy.
You know, and again, if you have anybody managing who you are and your brand and your personality, it's like just shut up and be positive. You just put $30 million in your bank.
Yes, you did. So be happy with that. All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks to Albert Breer for checking in. Thank you to all for you for all the calls today. Of course, thanks Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm. I am Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.